And the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Once again, they have sponsored us for the 2021 season. For those of you that are going to be going to the Nebraska game and you want to get in to their tailgate, and maybe you want to save some money, but you haven't made the commitment, and I don't know why you haven't, to join the Goal Line Club, we do have a promo code for you.
It is Hoodie10. That is Hoodie10 at checkout, H-O-O-D-I-E, or H-O-O-D-I-D-Y-1-0. If you get $10 off getting into the tailgate to come hang out with me, Luke, a bunch of other Gopher fans like we talk about each and every week, unlimited beverages, adult or non-adult, you have Tony's Diner in there, and you are in an elite location right across from the stadium, so you can get the most bang for your buck and then head on over to Huntington Bank Stadium, Luke.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buehr.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this bi-week edition as we get to talk a little chair trophy, we get to talk a little injuries. And oh, by the way, Luke, I've also got some news to share that I think is now on the social media.
So you sent me a message. I think we need to get to this first, most importantly. you sent me a message. And I'm trying to put my kids to bed, right? Like this is a thing in my life now. And it says, oh, by the way, thought you should know. And you send two photos, like, I'll get to that later. And I'm assuming it is, like, you've dug into some stats and, you know, you're going to tell me some, like, you know, silver bullet of how to fix the Gopher football season. You want to talk about it and have a special episode. And little do I know, you've literally gotten a verbal commitment from the six-star, like the six-star recruit, yeah. You've locked it down. Like, I'm telling you, man, congratulations.
Yeah. So after the game on Saturday, I decided to propose to my better half, and she somehow, I don't know why, but she said yes. And so after 8 years, and we already got a house and all that, I figured it was time to put a ring on it. And It's a nice shiny ring. So we are we're very happy to now be engaged.
Yeah, obviously, congratulations. We're excited for you. My wife and I are very excited. You know, my son still is probably going to cry every time we show up to your house because your dog is so ginormous. But that has nothing to do.
My big scary 180-pound mastiff that scares him.
No, yeah, but obviously we're elated for you, and I'm sure all the listeners are more elated that, you know, on the many different platforms on which they can find you, there won't be conversation of when you're actually going to pop the question. At this point, I was getting annoyed of people asking me when you were going to ask Liz to marry you, but I'm grateful that it's finally over, and I'm sure her parents are as well.
Yes, everybody's thrilled. Everybody's happy. There's finally now a ring on the finger. So I figured, you know, we got a bye week to kind of celebrate. And then this weekend for the bye week, our two best friends are actually getting married the bye week. So it was awfully thoughtful of them to think of me, which I'm sure they did.
Yeah,
to know if I was going to have a chance to be in that wedding, it's going to have to be on October the 9th. So it's exciting. And, you know, we got a little bit of things to talk about here before we get to the main course. That is our special guest for this episode, and Casey O'Brien was lucky, and we were very gracious to get some of his time to talk about the chair trophy and trying to raise some money for an outstanding cause. But I think on the flip side of what the good news I have to share, it's the Trey Potts news, which obviously isn't good, Luke. It's not good, however you want to look at it here.
Yeah, so I think you alluded to this on the breakdown, but didn't really have any information. We kind of assumed, I think assumed is the right word, that we wouldn't know anything until the next week when PJ and the coordinators were available for media availability. But they did put out a press release saying that Trey actually stayed in Indiana. And I think Mark Coyle was there, including like a team physician and maybe even a trainer as well. But generally speaking, when you get that kind of press release, that doesn't usually bode very well from my perspective.
No. On Monday, we got a press release from the U saying Trey Potts is, as far as on Monday, he was still in the hospital in Indianapolis. And that's where we saw him, or I guess after the game, he is immediately sent to the hospital from Ross-Ade Stadium there, and he remained there for at least two nights. And that's where you know it's very serious when Mark Coyle is the one staying overnight with you amongst the head athletic trainer, Meg Sikniak, and the team physician, Dr. David Jewison. So Minnesota's starting running back now with Mo Ibrahim out is in, you know, it's not looking great in terms of, well, here's what I'll say is he's doing much better. I don't know what that means. Even if I did, I wouldn't tell you because I'd have HIPAA right bearing down my chest. We'll see what the next update is we get from the Potts family / the University of Minnesota. But, I mean, positive thoughts and prayers sent the way of Trey Potts because, you know, you go back and you watch because his last carry, and we talked about it yesterday on the Parents Bear, was that third down run where he, a gritty run, doesn't look like he anything out of the ordinary there. And then he comes out of the game, and it was chaos on the sidelines there because something clearly happened. And I mean, two nights in a hospital, it's just it's very, very scary, Luke. So we're hoping for the best for Trey Potts, obviously, Luke.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at the end of the day, the health of players is the utmost importance, right? And one of the things I appreciate about PJ is that he prioritizes that in some ways, even over winning, right? You know, he wants them to be healthy and to be at their best. And, you know, the harsh realities of football is that it's very easy to get injured. And sometimes they can be very, you know, very difficult injuries to overcome. Obviously we hope the best for Trey. I have no idea what's going on. You have no idea what's going on. Hopefully he makes a full recovery and either can play this year or, you know, maybe we'll make a bounce back next year. Who knows?
Well, I was about to say, I mean, we got to talk about the on-field side of it too, but I mean, to your point, I mean, his health's got to be his first and foremost priority here, but I don't expect to see Trayson Potts anytime soon, which means in the first game, Mo Ibrahim pops his Achilles. He's out for the year. Trey Potts has this scary situation happen at Purdue. So it looks like for the final 7-8 games here, Minnesota might be on running back 3, which, I mean, we can talk about it. But, I mean, if it was up to me, I mean, I'm throwing Bucky Irving to the Wolves now. I mean, he has got to be your feature back to me of the remaining options there because you got Bucky Irving, Bryce Williams, Kai Thomas, and Cam Wiley. And again, the way I would approach it, and now Minnesota's got a bye week here to kind of figure it out. And they practiced yesterday and they practiced today here on Wednesday. And that's where they've got a week to figure it out because now Nebraska comes to town next week. But I would have Bucky as your feature back. So you go from Bucky being the number two back there to you put him in the 20 to 25 touch a game role, which again, I get it. It's a little scary to throw that, ask that of a true freshman, but I'd elevate Guy Thomas into the Bucky Irving role, and I keep Bryce Williams in his role there. But I mean, what do you think of that situation? Because, I mean, either way, all four guys that I just mentioned got to be ready to go now without question.
Yeah, so as we've discussed previously, you know, we said it would be terrible for Mo to go down, but we felt comfortable that they had more talent than most people would even give them credit for at running back. Now, we were really high on Trey Potts and he showed why, right? In large part.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, you were really high on Bucky Irving. I think we've seen that in glimpses, and we've also seen glimpses of Kai Thomas, but I don't think he's had a carry since the Colorado game. But yeah, generally speaking, you get young really fast and it will be interesting to see how they divvy up these carries and, you know, what's going to, you know, what they're going to approach, they're going to take. And frankly, Ryan, maybe they throw the ball more. I don't expect that to happen. But that could be a reality that they're kind of forced into at this juncture.
I mean, they have to, because that's where your experience lies, is with the senior quarterback and Tanner Morgan. And that's where you only throw the ball 18 times the other night. But I mean, it's going to be fascinating to kind of see what this offense turns into for Nebraska, because again, if you don't have Potts, you either have two freshmen in Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving, or you have two more experienced guys per se. But there's a reason why Bucky Irving played over, is playing over them, and why Kai Thomason, you saw in that Colorado game, why he was getting an opportunity over some of the other guys. So either way, I mean, like I said, all four guys got to be ready. I think on the other thing on the injury front, we did not get Fleck or the coordinators this week, but it sounds like it sounds like Dalen Wright is not back with the team yet, or at least he wasn't at practice on Tuesday from what I've heard. He's still kind of dealing emotionally with the loss of his best friend, who was that Utah player that was shot and killed, I think, 2.5 weeks ago now. They were incredibly, incredibly close. So hopefully Dalen Wright can get back sooner than later. But, you know, everybody else, I mean, you talk about Mariano Sori-Marin. He was at practice on Tuesday, which is good, and so were all the other guys. So we'll see how this bye week continues to turn, and we'll get into it next week when we preview the Nebraska game. We'll see how things have changed in that time. But, I mean, it's a tough situation for Trey Potts. And ultimately, again, his health is the first and foremost priority. But without Trey Potts, you're on RB3, and you still got over half the season to go, Luke.
All right, before we get to the Casey interview, let's talk a little bit about the Big Ten schedule. While the Gophers are off, there are five Big Ten games this week, Ryan. All Big Ten games this week. Let's run through them all real quick. Maryland is at number 7, Ohio State. This is an 11 o'clock kick on Fox. Maryland is down Dante Dimas. He's out for the season. That's their biggest playmaker. I don't think anybody is expecting Maryland to pull off a miraculous upset here, as they are currently 21-point underdogs with an over-under of 71.
Yes, I'm not expecting miracles here for Taulia Tagovailoa. I don't expect him to throw five picks, but I think this Ohio State team has figured some things out, as evident by their performance against Rutgers last week, and I think this is a game where Ohio State puts up 45-plus.
Yeah, it seems reasonable there. Looking at Michigan State and Rutgers, just kind of looking at the East again, Michigan State is favored by 5.5 at a 50 over-under, and this is at Rutgers, and this is on BTN. Are you surprised by this spread? I maybe not, now the more I think about it.
What's the spread again?
5.5 in favor of Michigan State.
Like, yeah, I mean, you're expecting Rutgers to have a bounce-back game at home. They couldn't play any worse than they did against Ohio State last week. Noah Vedral was bad. Their defense was bad. But, I mean, this is a great opportunity for Michigan State to get bowl eligibility 6 games into the year. I mean, I'm taking Michigan State in this game, but I get why Vegas would think that Rutgers is going to bounce back at home.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, Rutgers is a team who's got a good defense, and as long as they can stay on schedule, they'll be okay. You know, they have a game manager in Noah Vedral, but, you know, if they can stay on schedule, it seems like Shiano finds a way for his defense to outperform in certain games. Maybe this is the one. I don't think so, but, you know, it's very possible. Okay, then let's get to a game in the West. Wisconsin at Illinois. This is a 2:30 kick on BTN. Ryan, do you know
the
line?
Spread?
We talked about this on the breakdown.
Is it 8?
I think it started at 8. It's moved to Wisconsin minus 10 with an over under of 42.
Gross. like Vegas thinks this game is going to be like 24-14, which
did.
It definitely could be.
Yeah, the money line is interesting too. Minus 400 to Wisconsin, plus 310 to Illinois.
I can't believe that there's not the narrative. There is the narrative, obviously, of the Brett Bielema revenge game. He gets him at home.
Yeah.
I mean, this has to be a win for Wisconsin here. I mean, yeah. You got to figure it out with your offensive line, which I don't know that there's been a more disappointing maybe positional unit in the Big Ten West than Wisconsin's offensive line to the first 4 or 5 games of the season here.
Yeah.
They have been bad, but Illinois is also a bad football team. But I think it was just 2 years ago. No, I know Brett wasn't there, but we saw Illinois pull up the shocker in Champaign.
Yep.
When they beat Wisconsin to make it very, very interesting for Minnesota. So, I mean, I would take this game probably boy, I bet you I would take the under. I'm saying this game's going to be something gross, like 20-7.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably with you on that. I think the other kind of shocker to me has been this weather, and it will be similarly in Illinois. It's going to be like 81 degrees there. Like, man, what is this really October? Like, it has been so warm.
It's screwing up my time in the tree stand because I don't want to go sit in a tree stand in 78 degree days. I keep waiting for that cold front to come in so I can go go hit things. I mean, I'll probably head out tonight, see if I can't come on the ground. I know, woe is me, Luke, but
yeah,
and it is weird because last year, you'll remember, October was incredibly cold.
Yeah,
like we had a gigantic snowstorm here just, let's see, today's the 6th of October, so like 2 weeks from now, we had this gigantic snowstorm. It was already well below average temperatures, and now this year, it's just 78 degrees. I mean, it's even humid out today.
Yeah.
What's going on?
It's brutal. Okay, let's look at the Gophers' next opponent, the Nebraska Cornhuskers, who will host the Michigan Wolverines. Michigan is currently 5-0 coming into this game. This is what kind of shocks me, Ryan. Nebraska is now 3-3. They are halfway through their season. They will play their 7th game, and by the time they play the Gophers, they will have played 8 games already. That will be more than what? That'll be like 66% of the way through their season. Man, it's just wild to see how fast this is already going. Michigan is a 3.5-point favorite on the road with an over-under of 50.5.
It's going to be interesting because Nebraska's played better. They have played certainly much better. They just routed a terrible Northwestern team at home, put up 600-something yards of offense. But now, and what did you say the line was? Like,
it's
Michigan
three,
minus?
Yeah, minus 3.5. And keep in mind, too, Ryan, that they played Michigan State close in a 23-20 overtime loss, which really their special teams did them in there. And then against Oklahoma, I think the score is a little more deceiving than the actual game. They lost 23-16 when Oklahoma was number 3 in the country. But, yeah, I mean, outside of the stinker of a game they had against Illinois, they've been playing some good football.
Yeah, but here's the thing for Nebraska fans. I'm sure we have no Nebraska fans listening to this Gopher Football podcast, but can you win a close game?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you've blown out Buffalo. You've blown out Northwestern. I forget who their other win is, but anytime you've gotten into these ranked games and it's a close game, whether it's your special teams or whether it's an untimely penalty, I mean, you've had some just – you got to find a way to win a close game. It's their third straight night game because they played Michigan State at East Lansing in a night game. Last week against Northwestern was a night game, and now this will be their third consecutive night game before they have an 11 a.m. or in Minneapolis next week. So we'll see if that has any bearing on things. But, I mean, I like Michigan because until Scott Frost can prove that they can win a ranked game or just a tightly contested game, I don't know how you can pick the Huskers right now.
Yeah. All right. So to close out, probably the game of the week, probably the game of the season in the Big Ten is going to be the Nittany Lions going into Kinnick Stadium against the Iowa Hawkeyes. They are ranked 3rd and 4th respectively. Iowa is a 1.5 favorite with an over under of 41. Both have 2 ranked wins on the season. I don't think any of their ranked wins are currently ranked teams because, let's see, Indiana is no longer ranked. Iowa State is no longer ranked. Is Auburn still ranked?
I don't know for sure.
They're number 18. So Auburn is still ranked. But I do know that Wisconsin is not ranked. You know, these are 2 very good teams. Both have pretty similar identities, I'd argue, in that they're both, you know, defensive focused. Iowa seems to turn everybody over constantly. They have a reputation of benching quarterbacks, which is obviously their strength at the moment. And then Penn State is good in their own right. You know, maybe a little bit better quarterback play with Sean Clifford, but I've never been a big Sean Clifford guy. Petras has been basically more or less a game manager. They haven't asked him to do more than that. You know, statistically, he looked a lot better against Maryland, but in large part, that was thanks to some of the turnovers that they had and the game script that they had as well. You know, but this is going to be the kind of the game of the season, a crossover between the East and the West. And this is, you know, obviously the West's best team.
I am so intrigued. Now, I don't know how much of I'll get to watch of the Nebraska game or of this Iowa game, because the wedding I'll be in is, I think, 3 or 4 o'clock. So right smack dab in the middle of this game. But I'm going to be interested to see if Iowa wins this game. Did they do it because they somehow forced 55 turnovers again? Now, you know, I was listening to the Eyes on Big Ten podcast, and Greek had a good stat that Iowa has forced more turnovers than I think anybody in college football since either 2017 or 2018. So, you know, I continue to scream into the ether every week that this is not sustainable. But to a degree, it is. But to a degree, it's not. What happens if Penn State just turns the ball over once? Can Spencer Petras and this Iowa offense actually beat you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would, you know, if Iowa can do that this weekend at home, where Penn State just doesn't, where Iowa just doesn't get these incredibly timely turnovers, where I don't know if you saw Dante Demas. I mean, we were texting about it during it, but
yeah,
it is confirmed that he did. He's out for the year now with a knee injury. I mean, that's a 10-7 game in Maryland, and then he just dies and gets both of his knees taken out. Iowa gets the turnover within the 10 because he releases the ball as, again, Sebastian Castro didn't force the fumble. The guy tore both of his knees and he was gasping for his life, drops the ball. But the point I'm trying to make here is, you know, if Penn State just takes care of the ball, which I understand is easier said than done against an Iowa defense, especially in Kinnick Stadium, I mean, I think it's going to be awfully interesting to see what happens in this game. I'm going to take Penn State probably, oh, I don't know, I'll take the under again, because I think these are two really good defenses. I'd probably take 20-17 Penn State.
Yeah, you know, this is a really hard one to pick. I've told you this before. I don't trust Sean Clifford. So I feel like this is kind of Iowa's game to lose if they can find ways to continue to force turnovers, which I do think that Clifford has had a reputation of doing. But they also have to find a way to run the football, and I'm not sure that Iowa has found a way to successfully run the football consistently, especially in recent history. This is something you brought up with their offensive line previously. You know, not that Goodson's great, right? 99 carries for 430 yards, but they just, you know, they're only averaging 126 yards on the ground a game. That's just not the Iowa that I know. I'll probably go with you. I don't know. I'll pick, just to be a contrarian, I'm gonna pick Iowa, and I'm gonna pick them to win 24-20.
Beautiful. I mean, it's gonna be.
I'll take
those
over
are your two big. Yeah, those are your two highlighting games for the Big Ten before we get to come back next week. But Luke, you got anything else you want to say here before we get into our broken chair trophy talk with the man, the myth, the legend that is Casey O'Brien?
No, it still should be a fun weekend of football. It's nice to be back into Big Ten play. And obviously, I hope I'm right and you're wrong.
So now joining us on the podcast, we are very, very excited to get, and I mean, the list goes on and on for this young man. He was the Disney Spirit Award winner in 2019, most inspirational figure in college football, special teams player of the week in 2019, all academic Big Ten, and maybe most importantly to him, all conference in 2017 at Creighton-Durham Hall and Golf. It is Casey O'Brien. I think a lot of Golden Gopher football fans will remember this young man. Casey, we are so excited to have you on. How are things going for you today?
Well, number one, I appreciate you guys having me on, but I'm doing awesome. It's been my first fall not playing football since I was in second grade. So it's a little bit of a transition year for me. I'm trying to feel out, you know, staying around campus and being involved with, you know, going and supporting the guys I played with, but also, you know, being in the seats. It's a little bit different, but it's been great so far. Work in the real world is going well, and trying to do as much as I can for the hospital.
So Casey, like, you know, obviously you graduate, you make the decision that you're not going to be playing football this next year. But what happens after that? What are you doing, you know, after post school life?
Yeah. So I graduated a semester early, graduated in December. I studied finance, and then right away in February, I started down at RBC Wealth Management. and I'm working for one of the financial advising teams down here. That's what I want to do. So I went and got my Series 7 and 66 licenses. And so now I'm just kind of learning the ropes and learning the business.
Awesome. That's awesome. And then now tell me, these are the real important things. Now that you're not playing and you're not on the sidelines anymore, like, do you have a tailgate? And like, what are you doing? Are you going to all the games? Like, how are you getting involved with football as a spectator now?
Yeah, it's been fun. I've been, I think I maybe have missed one game so far, one home game so far, but I've watched every single one. But you know, I try to get down there early. And one thing that I've made sure of is getting into that letter window, the M Club room, and connecting with some of the older alumni. Nice. You know, it's really cool to get to meet some of those guys who played and wore those jerseys before us, and you know, see how much those guys are still involved, you know, being 20, 30 years out of the program. That's what is really cool to me, is that they really talk about like that brotherhood, but it really is there. And those guys really want to see us do well and the team do well, and they want to help guys find jobs and whatnot, and make sure everyone is doing well in the real world as well.
That's awesome. I guess the important thing, and one of the important reasons that you're here, is we want to talk to you about some of the initiatives you have, you know, even outside of your day job, right? And we'll get into that, but maybe to start, I just want to break this in and be like, when you were a player, were you aware of the $5 Bits of Broken Chair trophy?
I was. I would tell you that when I joined the team in 2017, it was a pretty big deal in 2017 and 2018. But in the last 2 years, it's kind of been felt like it's like the trophy's been swept under the rug. I don't know if you guys maybe have more info on that than I do, but when I grew up, you know, around Gopher football and watching Gopher football, I remember the Gophers beating Nebraska at Nebraska, and Pete Martell, who was a guy that I looked up to, you know, running around Memorial Stadium with this giant trophy of a broken chair. And so, you know, that's what I wanted to be a part of when I got to the U. And it wasn't really as, you know, accepted as I wanted it to be. So hopefully we can get that going here.
Yeah. So maybe just some brief history we can go through. Ryan and I have tried to do some research and understand this as well as we can. So Ryan, feel free to interject at any point in here. But sure. Basically the history is, in 2014, I'm just going to read you the tweet here. That was basically, there's a at Goldie Gopher account, right? And at Goldie Gopher tweeted at Faux Pelini. First of all, do you have any idea who Faux Pelini is?
No, but that's a funny account.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know who it is, but it's a very funny account, right? So at Goldie Gopher tweets, "Hey, Faux Pelini, how about a friendly wager on this weekend's game? Team that gets the most points gets a conference win. Seem fair, right?" That seems like a pretty nondescript tweet. It was sent on November 20th of 2014. It didn't become like a viral tweet by any sense of the imagination. You know, I'm only seeing like 187 likes. Right. And then here, Faux Pelini replies, "Okay, how about if you win, you give me $5. If we win, you give me $5. And if I win, you smash a wooden chair over your back," which, that's pretty much on brand for Faux Pelini, right? Like, pretty hilarious. But eventually it dovetails into some banter back and forth, and some random person comes up with a mock-up of what a trophy could look like. And then literally the next day, Goldie Gopher tweets basically a mock-up of that chair trophy. And I'm just curious, Casey, do you have any idea, like, did the specialists or anybody like related to Gopher football have anything to do with creating the trophy?
I have no idea on that, but I have seen the trophy before.
Okay.
I've seen it because I think that there was a piece of it that, you know, it was going to be like transported to the winning team's hospital, and they're going to ship it back and forth between Masonic, which is our hospital on campus, and then whatever the university hospital is at Nebraska. So I've seen the trophy at the hospital. They had it in a case in like one of it was actually Kyle Rudolph's end zone room, which is like this big sports, kind of sports decorated room with different jerseys and whatnot. And I saw it in there. I don't know if it's still there. I haven't been in that room in a while. That was the last time I saw it, probably 3 years ago in there.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. So, okay, let's get back to some history too. So the Gophers play at Memorial Stadium, like you mentioned. This was in 2014. The Gophers won 28-24. And as you're right, Pete Mortel is touting around the trophy. Ryan, do you remember that game at all?
I mean, I'm old, but I'm not that old. I certainly do remember that game. Yes.
And what important, do you remember an important play that happened in that game that resulted in the win for Minnesota?
Why don't you refresh my memory?
I believe it was one of your better friends stripping the ball on it.
Was that the Brian body count?
I'm almost certain it is. I didn't.
Yeah, it was. I remember the game.
I'm almost certain. Yeah. Like, he made a phenomenal play, which basically saved the game for them, right?
Mm-hmm. Because Nebraska was going down to score and go up, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he stripped that ball with like 60 seconds left, and it was right near the goal line. He strips it, just takes it away. And, you know, I guess the funny part about that is, so they win the game. They fly back that night. And I actually went over to see Brian that night, and he's just chilling at his apartment. I'm like, dude, you just made like the biggest play of the game. You should be out. And he's like, nope. So just like me and him sat in his apartment and played video games. And it was just like, that guy, Brian Boddy.
I'm trying to actually look and see here. Yeah. So they fumble with all of like a minute and 19 seconds left.
Correct.
Yeah. Phenomenal play by him.
I wouldn't even call it a fumble. He just grabbed it away from him.
Yeah, a phenomenal play that will live in Gopher history for a long time. Again, so the Gophers win 28-24. And then, as we mentioned, Pete Mortel touting the trophy around. I don't know if this is still the case, but Pete Mortel also had a photo from that game where, like, they're returning a punt and there's, five guys bearing down on him. It was, like, his Twitter banner for a while. I think that was from that same game. So, okay, so let's jump forward to 2015. Nebraska actually wins that game. And as they win, their coach at the time, I forget his name. Riley was his last name. I can't remember his first name. Mike Riley. They actually had on the official Nebraska Cornhuskers Twitter account a picture of him with the trophy in the locker room after they won. So they win it in 2015. Keep in mind that the University of Minnesota in 2014 actually had the chair make an appearance at a men's basketball game. So both schools legitimately recognized the trophy, you know, this internet-created trophy. And then all of a sudden in 2016, it just disappears. Nobody's really sure what happened, but it just automatically disappears. I don't know, Ryan, if you have any insight. We've talked about this in previous years, but just before Casey comes onto campus, this is going to be a football player. This trophy just disappears and it seems like neither school acknowledges it.
Yeah. I don't know. The complete story. I do think like the two administrations talked and they thought it was a fun gimmick type of thing, but they decided that they didn't want to adopt it. I don't know if it was because it was made by the internet and there's not really an outstanding tradition between the two schools there, but it is unfortunate. But luckily 2017 came around, Luke.
Yeah. So in 2017, basically there's a group that comes together on Reddit. Do either of you follow, the subreddit, the college football subreddit by chance?
Mm-mm.
Okay, it's pretty good. There's some good stuff on there. It can be pretty entertaining from time to time. But apparently on Reddit, you know, they resurrect the idea of the trophy. Somebody builds another one, and then we end up with an aptly named charity fundraiser tied to the trophy that benefit both the University of Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital as well as Team Jack, which I believe Team Jack raises money to fund pediatric brain cancer research and to work to create awareness around that disease. I think it's named after Jack Hoffman. Do you actually know Jack by chance? Or did you know Jack at all, I should say?
I did not know him personally, but I remember the story and I remember, you know, watching him. I remember he was involved with the spring game. I think it was like maybe his make-a-wish was to be involved with the Nebraska spring game. And, you know, they had a play where they handed him the ball and the whole team went out there and celebrated with him and the stadium was going crazy. And it was a pretty cool moment, pretty powerful moment. I never got the chance to meet him personally, but I remember that story.
Okay, so basically since 2015, you know, the trophy has kind of lived on as a charity fundraiser, and which is an awesome event. It's a way for fans to get involved, you know, in this rivalry, in this, you know, in the ongoing effort to raise money for these two great organizations. And we'll get into more detail around that. But just in the 4 years, they've raised $43,000 just literally via word of mouth. Which is totally awesome for two great causes. But maybe for us, Casey, you can just give us some idea of, you know, what it is you're doing and how this fundraiser is going to benefit your efforts.
Yeah. So, you know, when I graduated in December, I was able to really establish this cool platform in the world of college football. And, you know, this platform of being able to impact people going through adversity and people going through cancer or whatever that situation is, you know, being someone that others can look to. And I wanted to do something with that platform to give back to the hospital that has kept me alive. You know, I've been through cancer 5 times and I've done every single treatment and every single surgery and everything on that Masonic Children's Hospital campus, or that hospital right on campus. And so I wanted to give back to the hospital. And the idea that I had was originally I just wanted to donate a jersey. I just wanted to donate a jersey to the 9th floor, which is a floor where kids would go up there and they'll either turn left on the floor and go down to the rooms where you'll get chemo infusions or blood draws or, you know, platelets or things like that that they need to keep themselves going. Or they'll turn right and that's where all the oncologist offices are and you'll find out about your scans. So had a lot of good days on that floor and a lot of bad days where, you know, I've had to go up there and find out that my cancer has returned or, you know, had to go up there and go get chemo. And so it's a pretty influential floor. You know, they actually call it the Journey Clinic because like it's where your journey really begins and hopefully ends in a positive way when they tell you you have clean scans. But I wanted to do something for that floor. So the idea was that I was just going to donate a jersey that, you know, kids could see when they walked off the elevator. And the thought was, you know, kids will see the jersey and, you know, think about someone who has walked these halls and been able to still, you know, live and go live out their dream. And I had a chance to play college football. And so I talked to the people at the hospital and they were like, yeah, that sounds cool. But how about we just raise $1 million and redo the entire floor instead? And so I was like, you guys really think that we can do that? And they're like, absolutely. So that's what I said, okay, let's do it. And that's the project that I've undertaken. You know, we started with plans back in January. And then we kind of brought it to the public in June and July. And here we are in October now. And I think we've raised about $300,000.
Wow.
That's incredible.
That's incredible. That's awesome. And obviously this is another way for people to give. So obviously we should give them that information. So you can go to brokenchair.com. You can donate to either Team Jack or the Masonic Children's Hospital. And all that money is going to go towards the efforts that Casey has been working so hard to get a new floor built out. So on that floor, if they rebuild this out, you know, what kind of improved experience or are patients going to have by a brand new build out?
Yeah. So the idea is that, so the hospital opened in 2009, I think. And there's been no facelift since 2009. So, you know, the TVs are about the size of a laptop monitor and, you know, games and things like that are outdated. So we sat down with patients and we sat down with doctors and we sat down with the child, family, life people. And we just said, hey, write down everything that you guys would want and you guys would need. And we're going to see if we can put it all together. And we got a lot of great ideas and feedback. So some of the things that we're going to do is every single room is going to have Disney Plus, Netflix, Spotify, bigger TVs, video games, puzzles, books, iPads, anything you can think of that's going to help kids pass days, you know, because a lot of times kids are sitting up there with maybe one parent or maybe no parents at all. And it's lonely up there. And so we want to figure out anything that we could do to make that experience a little bit better. And so those are some of the ideas that we've been given and that's what we're going to go do.
That's totally awesome. So you're obviously, you've made quite a bit of progress. This is a good way. Are you involved in any other kind of activities around the game that people could find a way to get involved?
Not right now, but I'm open to anything that anyone wants to get involved with. I'm happy to be there.
Yeah, we got to find a way.
I'm going to the game, so I'll be around.
Yeah. So, okay, here's what I do know is the chair is going to be there for the game. They'll be going around to the tailgate. If you want to interact with the people that manage, this charity, just find them on Twitter. It's at Chair Trophy. So at Chair Trophy. So if those of you want the chair to show up at your tailgate or something like that, obviously tweet at them or DM them. But they're going to be around at the tailgates October 16th. So there'll be opportunities to take pictures, see the trophy in person, interact with all sorts of fans, etc. If you want to donate money, you can do that at brokenchairtrophy.com. And actually, Ryan, one of our sponsors, Ayers Rock Planning, is actually willing to match donations up to $250. So this is totally on the fly, Ryan. We have to figure this out. How are people going to match? How's he going to match those? So I'm thinking like tweet at Ayers Rock Plans, maybe tweet at Chair Trophy and hashtag Gopher Math. What are the thoughts from you guys?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense to me.
Okay. Well, I can tell you that right off the top of my head right now, I'm going to go DM those guys. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to see if there's any way that we can get our hands on a golf cart over there. And I'm gonna go around with the trophy. I'm gonna get a golf cart and I'm gonna take the trophy around.
Yes.
Anybody who tweets at me, I'll show up to a tailgate spot and we can do all the pictures they want. And hopefully people will be generous up to give a little donation and maybe we could match those donations that we can gather before the game.
Look at this.
Awesome.
Casey O'Brien knows that he can get the golf cart. He will come to you with the trophy. All you gotta do is just put some money towards an outstanding cause. So as Luke said, I guess we're going to have to include Casey O'Brien's Twitter handle here. It's KCOB14. So if and when you donate, because it's not an if and now is a when, because Casey's using his power here to make sure that you're able to do so. So tweet at him, Ayers Rock Plans at Chair Trophy. And they're going to match up to $250 of donations, which is awesome. And again, if you want to know how you can get in on this, you go to brokenchairtrophy.com. You'll see right at the top of the page, click on the donate for the Gophers. Brings you to a U of M site, the crowdfund there. And it's a very big button on the next page that says donate. So just take a screenshot, send it to Casey, send it to Ayers Rock Plans, send it to the Chair Trophy. Because again, all this money goes towards an outstanding cause. I mean, even hearing Casey talk about how you get to the ninth floor, and it's just like, you know, you're going to go one of two directions there. And it's just, there's so much good that can come out of helping these kids. And mm-hmm. I'm sitting here just shaking my head thinking about, you even describing that, I can't imagine what it's like to be someone that goes through it like you have multiple times, or even being a parent, or you even going to visit those kids just to be a beacon of hope that, hey, you're going to beat this. And then now look at Casey now. We're Mr. Finance. We got a big boy job and we're doing really well. I mean, it's incredibly inspirational. I can tell you that much, Casey.
Well, I appreciate what you guys are doing with helping us promote this thing. And, you know, like we've talked about there, it's a cause that everyone can get behind because we all know someone going through cancer. And, you know, it's even tougher to watch a kid go through cancer. So we want to make that experience as enjoyable as a stay at the hospital can be. You know, I know that's never going to be that fun, but we want to make it as enjoyable as we can.
Yeah, that's totally awesome. So,
Luke,
go ahead.
I was just going to say again, one more time, is brokenchairtrophy.com. Tweet at KCOB14, Chair Trophy, Ayers Rock Plans. They're going to match up to $250. I hope we get through that by the time this episode drops, just a few hours in. Because again, all this money goes towards an outstanding cause. Luke, what else do you have Chair Trophy related? Because I want to get into some specialist takes here with the former special teams player of the week. Here.
Yeah, I know this is gonna be a special teams centric podcast otherwise. So we do have to get into some of this. So as a specialist, Casey, you've had the opportunity to now spectate. I'd like to know, like, Mark Crawford, very deserving of his special teams performer of the week this week. What did you think in watching that in what was like torrential downpour in West Lafayette?
Yeah, I it's funny. We have a group message with a bunch of the guys from the specialist group last year, and it's all 10 of us or however many guys we had last year. And obviously 4 of us graduated and are now in the real world, and the other 6 are still playing. And so, you know, the 4 of us that have graduated, we all text in that group message all game long, knowing that they're all going to pick up their phones after the game and read what we've been saying. And so when Croft had that hold and we made that kick, I immediately texted Croft, that was the best play of the game right there. You know, I may have a little bit of a bias as a holder, but it's hard to hold in the rain. I'll tell you that right now. And he was on a grass field, which grass is more slick than turf is. And, you know, he got it down. Kicker did a great job. Snap was perfect from Brady Weeks, one of the best snappers in the country. And, you know, they made a clutch kick at the end of the game and helped seal the deal for us. But he also had a fantastic day punting too. And, you know, and obviously the coverage units played great, and we really played well on special teams on Saturday.
Yeah, it was.
And that's the big reason they won the game. Yeah. Was, yes, you know, the offense made enough plays and defense held in there, but Mark Crawford being able to let alone flip the field and then also pin them within the 15. I mean, Mark Crawford to Philip Howard so far has been one of the best connections.
Yeah, how fun is that to watch?
Yeah, I mean, it's every time. I mean, it's just if they need him to pin him within the 10, I think Mark's done an outstanding job of he and Howard know how to be on the same page there. But I think to your point, I mean, that hold, because they when you watch it back on TV, they've zoomed in on Crawford there. And that is, as Casey describes, an incredibly tough hold because beginning of the fourth quarter, middle of the fourth quarter, it wasn't just raining. It was monsooning. And Casey, I guess. Again, you're the one with all the experience here. Is that ball like waterlogged at that point, so it's a little heavier, it's a little slicker, or
yeah,
what would
actually
be the main differences?
Yeah, so it's funny you bring that up. We, you know, a lot of people, I think that you just trot out on the field and hold, but there's actually quite a bit of science that goes into it and a little bit of artist touch as well. But something that us as specialists work on, we always work on it. We're sure to do it once a week during game week and multiple times if the forecast doesn't look great for Saturday. But we always work on at the end of practice what we call a wet ball drill. And basically what it is that we have a Powerade container that we set right in front of our long snapper. And we have one of the specialists literally will dunk a football in just straight water, put it on the ground, and the snapper has to snap it back and the holder's got to catch it and get it down. So it's not like that was the first time he had ever been in that situation. You know, I think that we do a really good job of preparing ourselves for rain games and things like that. And, you know, the coaches take it very seriously. So I'm sure they were getting him dry towels and doing everything that they could to get him ready to go. But, you know, it's something that it's not easy. The ball is going to be slicker. You know, those leather balls get real slick in the rain. And it's a little bit tougher to catch. So you got to really squeeze it when you catch the ball. But he did it as about as good as you could possibly do it.
So just let us know, like, obviously the wet conditions are challenging to hold in and kick in as well. What are the worst conditions you've actually had to hold in?
Now, off the top of my head, we played a game in 2019. We played Nebraska at home, actually, and it was like mid-October, and it was snowing and super slick on the turf. And a funny little tidbit from that game is that I actually was told, like, hey, if we score here, you're going in. And in the back of my head, I was like, oh, boy, this could get interesting because, you know, the turf was slick. So anytime they would get a new ball into the game because they try to get a new ball in when the balls get wet. Anytime you set the ball down on the turf, it's going to get wet. And so that adds to the difficulty of holding like we've been talking about. And we ended up getting a 4th-and-1, I think it was, in Nebraska territory. And it was kind of borderline field goal range. And ended up deciding to go for it, and I think we got stopped. And we didn't get the first down, and end of the game, it happens. And the following week is Rutgers. And I wind up making the travel roster for Rutgers, and the rest is history there. But looking back on it, that's one in recent memory that I think about and look back on as, you know, that those were tough conditions to hold.
Yeah, definitely. Cold, wet, yeah, not good combinations for catching footballs and putting them down on the ground in a position to be able to kick it through. Not to mention the kicker has to plant their leg and then swing through it as well. So otherwise, you know, from a specialist perspective, what are you seeing this year? And what are just some of your observations there? And then maybe just some observations now watching on the sideline as the team as a whole.
Yeah, I think we've played well on special teams so far this year. I really like the way that Dragon's kicking the ball off. I heard a stat the other day that maybe it was the start of the Purdue game that he had like 21 kickoffs and 18 touchbacks. So, I mean, if you get a guy who can consistently kick it out of the back of the end zone, you're never going to give up a big play there, and you can guarantee that. So that's been a huge asset to us. Number two, Croft has punted the ball really well. You know, like we've talked about, the pitch and catch with Philly has been almost automatic, that, you know, if we're punting and we're trying to pin them, that they're going to be able to do that. So that's been sweet to watch. And then also I really like the way that Trickett has kicked field goals. I never got the chance to, I've met him a time or two. I never got the chance to hold for him and kind of feel the ball off his foot. But I know that he came in with a pedigree of being a good kicker. And I think the MAC conference he was in, he was maybe a MAC kicker of the year or something like that. But anytime you can go at a guy like that is going to be great, because they obviously have some playing background, and he showed it that you know, he could do it at the Big Ten level and has made some clutch kicks for us. So I like those three guys. Obviously, you got Brady Weeks, who came in as the number one long snapper in the country, and he's played for us for 3 years now, and he's been as consistent as it goes. I mean, you know that no matter what, Brady's going to give you a good snap, and it's really, really helpful for our holders and our punters to know that they don't even have to think about the snap. Like, they can think about executing their job. It's going to be right in their hands every single time. And not every school has that luxury. So Brady's having a great year. He's covering well as well. And then I think that we've done a really good job on our punt and our kickoff coverage. You know, and maybe I'm forgetting something, but I don't remember any big plays that we've given up. And, you know, that's a huge part of the game. You know, those are momentum changing plays there. If you can return a kick for 40, 50 yards and get it out to midfield. So I feel like we've covered well there. And then I also love to see my guy Brock Anikstad catching punts. That kid's he's a walk-on, you know, one of the hardest working kids I've been around. Yeah, he stays after every single day, and he's catching balls and he's catching extra punts. And I wouldn't want anyone back there besides him, because he's so sure-handed. And, you know, he's going to fair catch balls when people are coming at him, but you've also seen him, you know, have a couple 10, 15 yard returns where he catches a crease and he can make him miss a little bit. So it's been fun to see him back there. You know, he's earned that spot for sure. And then I like what we've got with the young guy back there returning kickoffs. I think that maybe it was Miami of Ohio. We had a nice big kickoff return. And, you know, I think that we've returned the ball well, and it's good to see some explosive plays there. But, you know, all in all, I really like what we're doing this year on special teams, and we got to keep that rolling to keep our ball club moving forward.
Okay, just as a spectator or as a player, is it more nerve-wracking to watch the game on the sidelines or in the stands or on TV?
I would tell you it's more nerve-wracking to be on the sideline, because you're so emotionally invested. You know, you've been practice Tuesday, practice Wednesday, practice Thursday, film, workouts, everything all week leading up to this 3 hours on Saturday. Whereas, like, you know, in the real world, you know, we work all week and then we just show up to the game on Saturday. You know, we haven't seen all the work that goes into it and all the hours that the coaches are putting in, game planning and scheming up. And, you know, it's when you're a part of it, and when you're, you know, one of those 120 guys or whatever it is in that coaching staff, and it's very, very important. And so you don't ever want to see something bad happen to your guys out there.
All right, Ryan, you got any parting questions before we let Casey get back to his day job?
I got one left, and I know it's a question you've probably answered so many times since that game in Rutgers there in 2019. But when Fleck embraces you on the sideline there, what is he telling you for that long embrace there?
Yeah, well, actually, so I held that first ball, and I went out, I actually saw him out on the sideline, and I went over to him, and I told him it was worth it. Because one thing that we had been talking about for that 2019 season was, you know, is it worth it to you? Is it worth it to give up, you know, your social life or your life outside of football to have the season that we want to have? And for me, it was about, is it worth it to go through everything that I've been through in the hopes that I would someday play in a game? And I got to that moment and I played that game. And first thing I wanted to go tell him was that, you know, everything that I've been through is worth it. All the hospitals visits and all the surgeries and stitches and everything like that, that I had, you know, to put up with and battle through to get to, you know, stepping on a Big Ten field. To me, it was all worth it in that moment. And I wanted to share that with him. And, you know, he just let me know that he cared about me and was really proud of me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. We've been stoked to have you on. Again, for those that want to donate to the initiatives at the Masonic Children's Hospital that Casey is working towards, you know, go to brokenchairtrophy.com, click on the Minnesota side, provide a donation, you know, take a screenshot of your donation, and Ayers Rock Plans will, they will actually match up to $250, you know, and tweet it, Casey, maybe he'll swing by on the golf cart. You can see the trophy, hang out, give him a high five, take photos, etc. So, you know, all in all, Casey, awesome to talk with you. Appreciate all that you're doing for the Masonic Children's Hospital. And yeah, dude, you're just awesome.
Appreciate you guys having me on. And Gopher fans, be on the lookout for tweets coming out about me flying around on the golf cart, you know, before our 11 a.m. game on Saturday. Somebody better have some eggs on the griddle for me, but I'm going to be flying around early. So, you know, keep your eyes out on Twitter, and I'm going to be coming around with that trophy.
All right. Again, we want to thank Casey for joining us. Again, Ayers Rock Planning, thank you for so much for being able to donate and match some of the contributions that will be made from listeners. That's just awesome. And again, want to thank the Goal Line Club for their partnership with us. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.